you know, had the same exams like the public schools had, but the way they were brought up or taught was, you know, very, it was not like strict rules and disciplines. They just were flowering and growing and disciplining themselves and becoming thinkers, and they excelled in all the, you know, exams that they gave also. Uh-huh. And finally, these kids went into astral travel and also could see what their mother, father were doing while they were in school, in the dormitories, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So so then, you know, these were like, they became like extraordinary kids. And people traveling around in that area also could feel the energy, like there was some kind of different energy, they could feel the energy. And that uh-huh. was not the right time for Bhagwan to start. What he wanted to start is transmitting the energy, which he started just about 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Then he closed down the school because people were feeling like mystical experiences happening and everything. So he thought it was not the right time, so he pulled the energy back. And later on, in, you know, 4 years ago, he saw that the only solution to this problem was by transmitting energy to other people. So he saw that his son could transmit the energy to other students, and they started feeling, their perception started changing, they started seeing things in a different manner. So he knew this is how he was going to help the world, not that he alone could do it. So so everyone who goes now to the Oneness University, they're taught, you know, how to live a life. It is not about, you know, bringing a transformation in the world. We are always talking about how the world can change, what should we do to that. But what he's talking about is individual transformation. He says if an individual transforms, you know, is awakened, then he can help his own family. And then from the family to the community, community to the nation, that's how we are going to be walking. So he wants to work on the grassroots level. He wants to work on the individual and see why there is so much suffering, and to, you know, work on the hurt and pain and traumas that are within an individual, and to set right the relationship.
Well, that's rather interesting. I had always told everybody, you know, fix your own little corner of the world and it'll spread. You know, you plant flowers in your little corner, and before long, you know, your neighboring corner will do the same.
Very good. That's exactly the way it's going to work. But most of the, if you see, everybody's talking about how can we bring a world peace, how can we bring transformation in the world. How can that happen if we don't start on ourselves? We are trying to make changes outside without thinking of making changes within us, you know.
Yeah.
So
uh-huh.
you are perfectly right what you were saying. Start with the little corner, and then the little corner will spread further on.
Uh-huh. I find that very, very interesting. But some of the terminology that you use might be a little confusing to people.
Okay, tell me.
You talk about transferring the energy. You know, what exactly are you talking about?
Okay, transferring the energy is, in Sanskrit, it's called Diksha. But Diksha is, it's divine energy that is channeling through you. And as you're giving that energy, you can give this energy, you can transfer this energy. It's not I am giving it. It is flowing through me, this supreme energy or collective consciousness, supreme love, whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
And as I transfer, I do it with two methods right now. I can do it over the phone right now as well. And by just taking an intent, I can transmit that energy. The other way is by touching the head of the individual, the crown chakra. And
uh-huh.
as you touch, it's just amazing. You will also be able to feel. Right now, you may be thinking, oh, it's only a concept, an idea. But you will feel it yourself as we transfer. If you want, we can do it on the phone as well. But as we touch the head of the individual, there is some changes that happen. And what are the changes? We cannot change the individual. Bhagwan
uh-huh.
says the individual is equal to the brain. So in order to change the individual, the brain has to change. So what happens when the energy is transmitted, it's a neurobiological process that happens. It's not just psychological or it's in your mind. That is why this process is not like something that, you know, will happen for a while and then not happen. It's a process that starts. And that process can work different for different individuals. For some, hurt and pain may come out. For others, joy may come out. For others, it will be a very different experience. So as the energy is transmitted, so the brain is rewired. Because the brain is rewired now, you can perceive things differently. Because when you're hurt, say if somebody says something to you, in the class, the teacher may say something which would hurt some people and may not hurt others. It is because how each individual is perceiving that.
Right.
Okay? So because it's not coming from that, what the teacher is saying, it is coming of how you're perceiving the message that is coming to you.
Yeah, I understand that. That's always been a problem with communicating things. Sometimes you're sending things you don't intend, or people are receiving things that weren't even sent.
Yeah, exactly. They want to hear what they want to hear.
And sometimes it's a negative message that they're wanting to hear.
Right. So the perception changes as the rewiring of the brain happens. Your perception changes. Your conscious level raises. And when your conscious level raises, in somebody saying something that was bothering you earlier, now it may not bother you at all. You may think, oh, okay, so what? You know, and you go on with life. So, but it is a process. It's not going to immediately happen. For some, it will immediately have an effect. And for others, it will be an ongoing process. They'll need a lot of transmissions for this awakening to happen. But they will all feel the whether they feel the energy or not, but the process has started. And eventually, if they sit down and think, everybody comes to a conclusion, yes, it has changed my life. Yes, this little thing has happened. But the mind sometimes will not let us, think, yeah, it has happened. The mind is so strong, it will take you away from reality, what is there.
Yes, so, I can.
This is what and in the transmission of the energy, that's called, it was called the Diksha before, the oneness blessing we call it, two things are happening. One is the mind gets decluttered, because mind is the one which is causing so much friction, so much hurt and pain. As somebody says something, it judges others, judges themselves. Oh, why did he say I didn't do a good job? And why did he, not appreciate what I did? They start thinking, judging them, saying, they don't appreciate anyone, I don't know what they think of themselves, and then they start judging themselves, saying, oh, maybe something's really wrong with me. And so this conflict goes on, and all this commentary of the mind goes on, so you are not able to see the reality as it is. And for that, to see the reality as is, like when you're tasting food, you are not able to taste it. As you're experiencing, say even the water, drinking the water, you're not able to experience that. You're not experiencing whatever you're doing, driving a car, walking, talking to your child, listening to the music. You're not totally there. The experience, when the mind is not chattering, is totally different, because all the time the mind is running and thinking, I need to do this, I need to pick up that. Your child is talking to you, you're not even listening. So that is
very true. And I don't know how many times, I've been standing, doing something, dealing with the public, and all of a sudden it dawns on me, I don't have a clue what I just said, because I was thinking about something else entirely.
Yes, that is what is happening. That is the human nature right now. It's happening with everybody. So the only way, this is like the oneness blessing is a benediction. The only way you can break through this mind is with this oneness blessing. And once this is slowed down, so the oneness blessing it rewires the brain and it slows down your mind. And as it slows down your mind, now when you're actually walking in the garden, you're really appreciating the flower. You're looking at the flower. You're looking at the tree, it's so beautiful. You appreciate what you look at. You know, and you know, the same thing in, like in my garden, when I went through 33 days of process, when I came back, I could even feel the rose bush on top of me, which had dewdrops on it, without even looking up. I mean, there was so much awareness. There was so much, like, the trees that I had in my own yard, I have a 6-acre lot, I was walking around, I was seeing, it was like a new thing I was looking at, and it has always been there. But the mind is not letting us enjoy or experience anything. And the second thing that major things will happen during this is your senses get heightened. That is why you're in the seeing, there's only the seeing. In the listening, there is only the listening. In as you're eating, you know, there is only the taste. You will feel, I've never had this taste so good. There was a person...
Or so bad.
It is amazing, you know, how it is. And what they do is, we send people for the 21-day process to India for this, you know, for whatever conflict they have, to work on the inner conflict. We work on the, it's an inner journey.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, instead of to make the outside beautiful, we work on inside. Because we say the, you know, outer is the reflection of the inner. So that 21-day process is about working within each individual. What are the hurts? What are the pains? What did your mother say when you were born? All those things are affecting you right now. So in that 21-day process, a lot of releasing is happening. A lot of things are, you know, whatever you have not experienced fully is within you. So here, in this process, what is happening, what you have not experienced or you're pushing down, you're doing the sorrow management, we are trying to bring that up, it, you know, it's brought up. Oh, here you were hurt when your father was, you know, when you were 7 years old, he said this to you, and that hurt is still there, so your relationship with the father is not right. As you experience that, it just evaporates, and your relationships are set right. So, as because relationships are very important for an individual to flower and grow and to be awakened. You know, if these relationships are not right, everything seems so ugly and the world seems it's not worth living. So we stress on, you know, working on the inner conflict. As you work on the inner conflict, the outer becomes very beautiful. Your relationships will become beautiful. You will perceive the whole world in a different manner. You'll see everything in a different manner. You'll enjoy your little kids when they're talking to you. It is such a great experience.
You know, a lot of it makes absolute sense because so often we do overly complicate everything and we're looking for answers outside, and really the problem and the answer both exist inside of us.
Exactly.
I mean, that's almost a universal truth,
mm-hmm.
you know, no matter what ideology you subscribe to.
Exactly. And so I will... have also Doug would share his experience when he went to the... Is there any other specific question you want to ask me?
Well, in the little bit that I read, when I was introducing you, they mentioned avatar for enlightenment, and that's kind of a strange concept to me. So if you could explain that one for us, too.
Okay. We actually try not to use the word enlightenment. It was previously used, and it's causing a lot of, conflict in the sense that, you know, enlightenment to each individual means something different. So, you know, like you may have your own concepts and ideas about what is enlightenment, and another person may have their concepts and ideas. So, you know, we are talking about it as awakening of the individual at whatever level, or we are raising the conscious level as, you know, we are working on hurts and pain, the conscious level raises. So the avatar actually is, that's not what Bhagwan calls himself. That is what people had such great experiences, and they called him the avatar. They said, an avatar is like, you know, Christ or Buddha.
Okay, a prophet or a messiah then?
Yeah.
Yes,
okay. Exactly. And through whom some aspects of the collective consciousness are flowing. Okay, not all aspects, of the consciousness can flow through an individual. Only if that individual does not have hurts and pain within him, then these energies, the cosmic energy, it can same way flow through you or from through me or through other individuals who are totally empty. There is no hurt, no pain. They will be receiving the cosmic energies coming into them, and they will be able to do the same thing as Bhagwan is doing. So an avatar is the one who is like, you know, doesn't have so much conflict, doesn't have any conflict within himself. He has only compassion, love, and his heart is flowered, and that is what an avatar is. So since this energies are flowing through him, and he can transfer those energies to the ones who go to the 21-day process, and you know, as they go through the 21-day process, they work on themselves, and then they can come and transfer the energy like I am doing and Doug is doing. So Doug was
now,
also...
This flow of energy, for the person that's having it flow through them, like when they're awakening someone else and whatnot, does it tire them out?
No, not at all. It is, in fact, the people I have, you know, we call them oneness facilitators or diksha givers. These people who are giving the diksha or the oneness blessing, they enjoy it so much. When I do a workshop anywhere, just now I had done a workshop in Connecticut, and so many of them come there. Why? Because they receive so much more as they give. This, you know, like it's like karmic law of karma, what you give, you shall get. So here, as you're giving, you're getting more, and they get into a real high state as well as they're giving. And they can feel these energies flowing through them, and they can feel, you know, it's such a joy to help other people. And
yes, it is.
In the process, you're also growing. So it's a very, very beautiful process. And we have about 1,400 oneness facilitators in USA right now.
Ah, okay, that's quite a few.
And I will be doing a two-day workshop where I will be working on relationships and how to set right your relationships and talking about the Oneness University and the 21-day process in San Jose and at the... Yeah, at the Center for Spiritual Living in San Jose, if anybody wants to attend that, it'll be great. Yeah.
Now, among the people that you work with, do you also work with children?
With children as well. Yes, we are. Right now, we don't so much cater to kids, but if they do come, we do help them as well. But in India, they have started something called the youth program. You know, for the youth, you know, they come and they go through a process, and usually the children have a lot of conflict with the parents. That is set right, and as that is set right, they said, if your relationship with your mother and father is not right, you will not prosper in life. It is the inner and outer, worlds are so connected that, you know, whatever is inside and you're getting hurt and not forgiving, not seeking forgiveness from your parents, you will, if it's the mother, you will never progress as much. You'll have lots of hindrances in life. You know, like whatever project you start, there'll be always an obstruction in that. But, and if you have not set right your relationship with the father, then financially you will not do well. So, you know, it is amazing, as soon as people work on these relationships, the children, you know, they excel in their studies, and they find jobs, and they do very well financially and stuff like that.
Well, when you were talking about how it helps the mind to focus, we have so many children who have attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the big problems is they cannot focus their minds very long at a time. And so they don't do well in school, and they often do get in trouble.
Yes,
and I was thinking, you know, it would be so good for them.
They can't focus is because they have so much hurt and trauma inside. You know, once that is released, they'll be so calm, they will be able to focus on what the teacher is. Right now they're so restless, they're jumping on the chair and not listening to what the teacher is saying because they can't. How can they? you know, how can they, when there's so much going on within them, so much is happening, the relationships are not right at home, you know, parents don't care, they don't have time for the kids, and naturally it is all, you know, it has to accumulate somewhere because we are not releasing it. We are not, anytime you do not experience whatever is happening, when you see your mother, oh, not there, you know, when you come home, and, you know, you're sitting alone, there's no lunch, there's no food on the table, there's so much hurt, so much pain, and that needs to be released. But they don't release it, they just take it inside. They do something called sorrow management, and then they go on with their lives. But that is because they have not looked at that hurt and pain, they have not experienced it, it is a big burden on them, and they will never be able to accept it in any way. So
that's interesting.
Yes, yes, it's very, very interesting. It is really amazing what the Oneness University can offer. And we here we do a lot of courses as well. We do also does workshops in San Jose, and many other 1,400 facilitators are doing workshops all over. Where are you? Where is this radio station at?
Well, I'm in New Orleans. Not all the shows are broadcast out of New Orleans. I have to live in New Orleans.
Okay. Yeah. So, I forget.
Well, you were talking about where all workshops were being held. So maybe you were wondering.
I don't know about New Orleans, but yeah. But if you search on the website, you might find the Oneness facilitator who can come and help you or help your kids as well. And
uh-huh.
We will very shortly start something with a. In fact, I am thinking of working with the school districts because this is really, really helping a lot of people. So I'm going to try and experiment with one of the schools. If it works, we'll be doing with other schools as well. And if you find the Oneness facilitator on the Oneness Movement.org website,
uh-huh.
They can go to that facilitator and call that facilitator. Otherwise, uh-huh. You know, we do announce big workshops when we do. There's a 5-day coming. There's a conference coming as well where people can come to.
You have a lot of activities where you're sharing what the Oneness Movement has learned.
Yes, yes. There is a lot to achieve in this because I thought this was the simplest thing and easiest thing to do without, you know, sitting in a cave and meditating for 30 years.
Yeah, most of us just don't have that kind of time. besides,
yeah.
That caves tend to be dark, damp, and have creepy, crawly things in them.
Exactly. I wouldn't be there then.
I never was fond of caves, I have to admit.
Yeah, you can be in the real life. So what here Oneness University is focusing on, you know, letting the our main motive is that the individual should be enjoying life. If he's walking on the grass, he's enjoying that. If he's eating, you know, here we are picking up food from a fast food place and then running here and running there and not digesting very well. Here, when you're eating, you know, so even taking a bite of whatever you're eating, it will be such a great...
Well, I'm afraid I don't think fast food restaurants would like us to actually experience their food.
No, we can
because we probably wouldn't go back.
You know, if the mind conflict was not there, even that would be better enjoyed than it is right now. Because with
true.
The conflict and the fast food and I have to get here, I have to pick up that one, I have to do that, our life are so stressful that we cannot... we are not enjoying life, that's it.
Uh-huh.
So the Oneness University's main you know, objective is that people should live a life, should enjoy life.
I think there's a lot of people who are actually seeking, because I know it, like in my own case, over the last few years, I've pruned out what I call dead wood in my life.
Right.
You know, things that just, I wasn't getting anything out of it. Why am I doing this?
Yes.
And so, you know, I stopped doing it. And that person is, I'm not getting anything out of that relationship. I don't need to have that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And just over and over until you get your life down to something much more manageable, at least, than it was. It may not be perfect yet, but at least it's more manageable.
Right.
And people are looking for answers, and why can't I concentrate? Why don't I sleep at night? why, you know, weight gain, that's a big thing, you know, what, and aches and pains as our population starts to age.
Yes.
These are all issues that are very real to many of us.
Yeah, they are all arising from, it's all psychosomatic in nature. It's all arising from what is going on within you. It's amazing. There's a doctor who's one of the facilitator who has seen even for hypertension. He saw his patients who were not for 20 years, you know, getting out of it, you know, now getting at lower levels than their blood pressure was. And many other diseases are being cured as well. It may not instantly happen, but for some, instantly things may happen, and for others, gradually it'll happen.
Well, I have a daughter. She's an adult now, but she has type 1 or is commonly called juvenile diabetes.
Oh, yeah.
And she has a lot of complications. Okay. She's in her mid-20s now. And I've been telling her for a couple of years, I said, it's in your head. You in trying to explain to her, it's not that I think you want to be sick, but it's whatever is making you get sicker is inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that the insulin, it's not your diet, it's you're thinking yourself sick. And I have not been able to express this idea to her well enough for her to understand that I'm not accusing her of some sin. I'm just telling her, you know, it's inside of you. You need to look inside, and that's what's making this happen.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all in the mind. You know, as I'm thinking, about 90% or 80% of the whole diseases that we are talking about is coming from the mind, you know. And then maybe what you eat and other factors and the, you know, pollution and all that also affects. But mostly it's in the mind. If you think, you know, you're going to eat this and, oh, this water is polluted, then it's going to really pollute you inside as well. But if you say, I can, you know, maybe shift the energy of this water and drink it, it's going to give you a different impact, though the water is polluted, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it is also how the mind can be so strong and make you sick. And what, in your daughter's case, is it in the family, the diabetes?
Yeah, pretty much. She developed diabetes when she was 15.
Okay, so it is in the family, right, history?
Right, right.
Yeah, for that, you know, sometimes ancestral cleansing can help, you know, because it's an imprint left with the ancestors have left, which need to be cleared. So that's why she is receiving that as well. You know, that
thing. Huh, that's interesting. I never would have. Yeah. My family's part Native American, and Native Americans in general have a higher risk of diabetes.
Oh. Okay.
And we were always told that it was because of the diet.
The diet is definitely there. That is really there. See, in the physical domain, we need to take care of what we need to take care of. If it's the diet, we need to watch our diet. And then internally, you must see if there is any residues there, or coming from the ancestors, that can be removed. In fact, what time is it now?
30 minutes.
Okay, I think, yeah. 5:40, okay. Yeah,
you have to go in a few minutes, huh?
Yeah, I will. I'll be here another few minutes, and then Doug will take over. And,
okay.
I have another phone conference for 1 hour, 45 minutes.
Yeah, I was aware of that, so we had switched around our breaks so that we could have you for the most amount of time, and then we'll have a break, and then we'll bring on Doug.
Yeah, and Doug will give you a lot of great experiences he's had and in the 21-day process, and he, you know, you can talk to him, he'll give you a lot of answers as well. So, yeah, and he's had tremendous breakthroughs as well.
And, you know, all of it, like when you go through this process,
yes.
And your body starts to get healthier, you know, yes, it's all in our head, but as you get healthier, do you stay healthier?
Definitely, definitely. You know, I actually was at, I don't know if you know a healer named John Roth. I was at his... about 2-3 years ago, he had invited me to give oneness blessing to all his, they had 450 people there, so to give them. And so as I was speaking to them, and I don't know, I never know what I speak, so it came out like this, and which I shouldn't have because he's a healer. And I said, if you're here for a healing, and, you know, it will heal you, and then it'll come back. Because what needs to be healed is the hurt and pain inside. If that is still there, the trauma is there, that all that garbage is inside you, you know, it will be, you'll be healed for a little while and again you'll get sick. So what real healing is, to start healing the internal conflict, the hurt, the pain, forgive others, seek forgiveness, you know.
So by removing, it's like you're removing the source, pulling the splinter out so that the infection goes away.
Yes, it's the root cause, and the root cause is not, we are looking at, you know, maybe it's, you know, something to do only with this diet or only with that or only with that. It's many things, and most of it is the inner conflict. Yeah, so that is the main thing.
So as you get involved with the oneness movement, you still keep your same life, because the whole point of it is to experience life, right?
Exactly. People should know that it's not a religion, it's not a cult. It is about, you know, letting the man who is not living, who's existing, start living a life, enjoying what he's doing, driving a car, going to work, he's enjoying the work. You know, talking to his wife, he's enjoying that. If she's nagging, he can still enjoy that as well. Because if he's, you know, it's how you perceive things, and you can see, oh, you'll feel so much compassion, because right now there's no conflict inside, and you see, oh my, she's suffering so much. You'll only feel compassion for her. And if you totally see what she's saying, you may get hurt for a moment. If you experience it totally, you will enjoy the nagging of your wife as well.
Well, for many people, that would be a definite change in perception. Because so often a nagging relative, be it your wife, your mother, your sister, your brother, even a nagging child, it's one of the real irritants in your life.
Exactly. But this is not only another concept and idea I'm giving you. It is for real. You know, these 1400 Diksha givers that we have, they are all, you know, have experienced things change in their lives. You know, how people are coming back to them, the ones who were not, you know, the mother who wouldn't speak to them is speaking to them, just on working on themselves. You know, so many things have changed. Life has just different meaning. It doesn't mean there will be no more problems. The problems will still exist, but only problems will not seem like a problem.
Otherwise, it increases our ability to cope with the problems.
Is so much more, because there is no inner conflict. So now, when there is no inner conflict, outer, you have so much energy to focus on what the problem is. How can I take care of that problem? Instead of saying, oh, what will happen if I don't get income, I won't be able to pay my bills, da, 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 all the worries and all that conflict won't be there, you know.
So
it's a very, very beautiful process. And Gaia, I would like you to come to India as well sometime.
It would be a very, very interesting journey for me, you know. Now I realize that your time is probably coming to an end with us now. Do you need to go now?
Yes, I would go now.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for coming on tonight.
And, you know, Doug, and I can also, while I'm sitting there, send some energies here. We can transfer energy to the listeners who are listening as well.
Okay.
You can do that as well, if you want it on the phone.
If that sounds like it would be most useful and interesting. Okay. So we're going to now go to a break. Everyone, I want you to stay tuned to the Donna Shades, and we will be right back and continue our discussion about the oneness moment with Doug Bentley. Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and we are discussing the Oneness Movement and are now joined by Doug Bentley. For those of you interested in joining the discussion by calling in on the toll-free number, you may do so at 1-877-786-0562. You can also join the virtual auditorium in Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com and clicking on the Paranormal Radio Network room in the Social Issues category. If you are feeling shy, you can email me a text question by going to www.giascott.com and clicking on one of the links there to email me. Now, Doug, would you please introduce yourself to the audience?
How you doing, Gia?
I'm doing fine.
Great. Thanks a lot for having us on. Really appreciate it.
Well, I'm enjoying it so far. So, can I get you to tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure, sure.
We have another person.
So, basically, I'm 27 right now, and when I was about 25 years old, I was working in Washington, D.C. I now live in California, helping out the Oneness Movement. And I was struggling very much to become successful in life. I was very much trying to sort of lead the life I wanted to lead and be abundant. And I found that no matter what I tried, and no matter how hard I tried, I always fell short from being even able to complete my task, even be able to set a goal and just finish it. And I was never spiritual, nor did I believe in any higher power or anything like that. I was a very atheistic person in nature, and very scientific oriented. And I remember I started meditating because I heard that it could, quote unquote, expand your consciousness, things like that. And I started actually having mystical experiences. So I started searching online about these lights. I saw like purple lights, this and that, had these tingles running up my spine, things like that. And I came across a video of a woman, and this was back in about 2004, 2005. And this woman was in India, and this is an older lady actually, an American woman, and she was in India for a very special festival that was taking place at the Oneness University in Chennai, India. And she had received something, and something I'd never heard before, and it was this oneness blessing or diksha, this energy transfer. She was explaining how she'd been on the spiritual path all of her life, you know, for the better part of her life.
Mm-hmm.
The state of consciousness this woman was in and how she was explaining her experiences from receiving this really touched me in a way. It sort of unlocked something inside of me. It sort of awakened me to something really deep inside of me. I could see the way she was and how she was talking. Her eyes were wide open like a child. And the way she was looking around, the way her, you could say almost like her senses were experiencing reality, the way she was just embracing the moment she was in. I knew something extremely profound had happened to her. And she was explaining how she felt like she was declutched from her mind. She felt like she was in tune with everything around her. She felt like she was no longer separate from anything. And it was very profound because I was sitting here trying to, quote unquote, do it myself. And very clearly she was explaining how this state of consciousness was simply given to her by this energy transfer, this oneness blessing. And I just knew deep down inside this is absolutely something I have to experience. I mean, it was a fire that just lit inside of me. And what actually appealed to me even more beyond that was the idea when I researched it more, that you could go to this university and not only could you go through these experiences, but then you could transfer that state to other people. You could give the same energy transfer they're giving there to other people. And something, I never really cared so much about helping humanity, this and that, at that point in my life. I was very self-centered. But I couldn't explain it, but I felt like I absolutely had to give this to other people. This is even before I even received this. This is all the things that were going through my head. I just knew I had to help others in this way. So immediately I signed up to go to India. And
that's interesting.
5 days before I went to India, and now I'm stir crazy at this point, I have no idea what to expect. I've never really been outside the country. I'm going to a third world to go see, you know, these spiritual founders.
Well, I'm sure your friends and family were questioning your sanity at this moment, too.
Friends, family, boss, everyone. Everyone thinks, okay, Doug's lost it this time. And it's not expected. I've been on some strange pursuits in my life, so that's definitely in the right ballpark for me. So 5 days before I went, Sri Raniji, who just spoke a little bit earlier, she held a 5-day retreat, which actually she'll be having one later on this year. And I went to this 5-day retreat, and Sri Rani was there, and I've never attended anything like this in my life, any type of retreats on any level. And she started explaining certain things about states of consciousness. And then she basically said, all these are just ideas. Let's give you the experience now. People came around the room and placed their hands on my head. And I'm telling you, this idea of an energy transfer, you know, this happening outside of myself, all these things were very new to me. And I felt this tingling start happening in my head, and this cool energy running through my body. And she said, now just simply go outside and spend the rest of the afternoon outside. And I remember walking outside, and as I walked through the grass, I could feel for the first time in my life the grass underneath my feet. And I looked at the flowers for the first time in my life. It was just the experience of looking at a flower. It wasn't this idea of me thinking, oh, I'm looking at a flower. It was as if I was experiencing reality as it is. The senses were just simply experiencing what was there. It's very, very profound, and equally compared to the mind, it was very simplistic.
Well, I've always said one of the most beautiful things in the world is when you show something to a small child and they see it for the first time, and through them you get to experience that all over again.
Totally right. Absolutely. It's so funny because I remember a certain stage in this whole process myself. I remember laughing out loud, and I was actually dating this girl at this point, and she had not received this or gone through this process, so she completely thought it was crazy. I started laughing, going like, I'm a child again. I feel like I'm 4 years old again. This feels incredible. And I suddenly realized, as we've been told in the university, that awakening, or the awakened state, or enlightenment, if you want to call it such a term, is the natural state a human's supposed to be experiencing. You're supposed to be enjoying life each moment, not the struggle that the mind kind of puts us into.
Most of us, I think, are sort of on that rat's wheel called being responsible, being a productive member of society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you get on that rat wheel, and by the time you turn 18, 20,
absolutely,
and you don't get to get off for a very long time.
Oh, you don't. Just that 1 week vacation a year into Hawaii, and even then you're thinking about, oh, I got to go back in 5 days.
Or, you know, like I was on vacation, I did get phone calls from work while I was gone.
You know? There you go, exactly. Everyone checks their email 3 times a day, even if they're on vacation.
Exactly. You know, we're very, very tied to that rat's wheel. And sometimes, you know, I questioned whether or not Now, I happen to be lucky. The job I do during the day, I enjoy. I like it. I have fun doing it. But I still work way too much, I think. You know,
the most interesting thing I've experienced in this process related to this is that it's so strange how that we even have such division inside of us that we have the idea of what is work and what is not work, what is happiness, what is not happiness. And the most profound things happen when this process just starts naturally happening in the person, is that work itself actually becomes joy. It's when the actual mundane tasks of life, the repetitive manner of life, literally become joy because the mind's no longer comparing each moment to the previous moment. So it's almost as if life itself takes on a new meaning in the sense that the mind no longer is trying to put meaning to life. And so suddenly you return back to your normal job, and you suddenly love it. You return back to life, the rat race, and you suddenly love it. You suddenly see, it's just a big game, let's just enjoy it. And you actually find yourself much more productive. You find yourself much more in tune and much more...
I hope I don't start liking my job more because, actually for me, the only part of my job I don't like is going to work.
The drive.
Once I'm there, well, I don't even have to do that. I mean, it's literally 5 steps from my door and then I'm at work. But, you know, that's the only part of the day that I don't like. The rest of it is like, dang, the day's over already. You know, I do. I like my job. I work with dogs. It's a wonderful job. You know, it's a nice job. It's a fun job. Not everybody is as lucky as I am.
That's true.
But, you know, it is. It's a fun job. It's pretty low-key. You know, granted, there's problems. You know, like we were talking about earlier, you know, nothing makes the problems go away, but it might increase your ability to cope with them.
Totally. Absolutely. It's so interesting. You know, some experiences I've had in this process, I've had such experiences where I clearly saw how the only thing happening is the universe itself. There's no separation, there's no individual that's doing this or doing that. It's just this one massive living thing that's just interacting with itself on every level. And suddenly, when you have such awakening experiences, everything that bothered you before, every struggle you had in all your relationships suddenly dissolves, because you suddenly realize it's all a part of one thing, and that one thing is doing it all. And it's very profound, and that's what this entire process of awakening is being offered right now, the sense that as more and more the sense of separation, the sense of division, the internal conflict ceases, the more and more, even though the problems externally are there, you're at such peace and harmony with everything that even that brings you great joy. You see somebody yelling at you, you're just smiling because you see so much into that person because you see it within yourself, that there's no conflict. It's a great and very beautiful thing. And even if you find yourself yelling back, the other day I was with my friend and I was upset and we were yelling at each other and we were laughing hysterically because we were upset. But it was not as upset in the sense that I was suffering. It was just that we were yelling at each other and that was that. And it was over and 2 seconds later we went out and had ice cream or whatever it was, you know.
Uh-huh.
Very beautiful.
Well, I know that here over the last few months, often I've learned to just tell myself, you know what, it doesn't matter. It really does not matter. It
does not matter.
A person's opinion or that, you know, that other driver that flipped you off as they whipped around you or the one that screamed at you and called you a name, you know. It doesn't matter.
No.
It really, you know, that clerk that was rude, you know, none of it matters. You know, why let it upset you? Because it's not going to change it. It's not going to make it go away. You know, so why take on the weight of whatever it was that you were getting dumped on for, you know?
It's the most interesting thing because often you might hear such things as, like, this idea of a causeless love or limitless joy. These things these saints and sages spoke about in the past, where they said love is actually an abundant state of being where it's just flowing through you. There's nothing you're doing. It's just there. A lot of times when we find ourselves in situations where we get extremely angry at somebody, if we really look at the situation, we actually discover that we were actually not in a good place of being in the first place. It was just they were simply the straw that broke the camel's back. It was just simply they set you off.
Oh, yeah. That's often true.
So it happens to be that most of our society is in that state, that we're not in a liberated state of being where our senses are simply experiencing reality as it is. We're in peace and we're utterly in tune with what's there. When that is a natural state, everything's joy. You're in such a beautiful state, everything's joy. Somebody's yelling at you, you're just only smiling. Because it's abundantly inside of you coming out. Right now, you could say humanity is in almost the exact opposite state. We're clinging on to things externally because we need joy out of them. We control our relationships because we're maximizing how much love we can receive from that person. Suddenly, someone breaks up with us, it's a tremendous problem because we no longer, quote-unquote, have somebody to love us. So it's very interesting in this process how the roles reverse. The sense of what is needed suddenly is almost the opposite. You're in an abundant state where you only have compassion for everything. Those relationships aren't even a problem at this point. In fact, your relationships become very, very beautiful. I say my relationship with my family is just incredible these days because I truly connect.
They no longer think you were crazy to go to India, right?
What's that?
They no longer think you were crazy to go to India, right?
Even if they do still think I'm crazy, I'm at utter peace with that.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, sometimes, you know, everybody has families, and everybody has families who try to pigeonhole you in a slot that you may not necessarily fit.
Absolutely.
And, you know, their perceptions of you are coloring which pigeonhole you should go in. And, you know, it's just one of those things. You know, I have a huge extended family, and they do. Their perception of you often, you're like, you know, didn't you ever pay attention to me when I was there? Because, you know, it's like they don't have a clue sometimes.
Mm.
So, you know, it is interesting that at least you're comfortable with it. Now, earlier today when I was talking about the program that I was going to be doing with the Oneness Movement, the perception was oneness meant me, singularity, you know, my stuff sort of thing. And they were like, why do we need another? The world is selfish enough. So So could you explain the concept of oneness a little bit better so that if that person is listening right now,
absolutely,
they understand
absolutely.
What when I was saying, no, that's not what it's about.
That's great. I actually had the same thing. In fact, before I went to India, my coworker said, you know, almost exactly the same thing. And it scared me as well, this idea of oneness. Won't we all be robots? You know, won't we all... You know,
or part
like
of the Borg, or when they're, is that what it was?
Exactly, you know. And uh-huh. who's doing this? Is it all going to be their consciousness or whatever? Basically, I wouldn't want to necessarily... I'll talk about my experiences. I think that's maybe the best way to explain this.
Okay.
Because I also had this intellectual idea of this whole idea of what is oneness. First of all, it has to be an experience to really, really grasp it in one sense. But the best way is that there's many different levels of this oneness, and one sense of oneness can simply be this, and I think this will relate to a lot of people. Inside each one of us, we're divided by our thoughts. There's many personalities. There's one personality wants ice cream, there's the other personality who says we should be on a diet. There's one personality who wants to make a business venture, there's the other personality saying, well, you failed last time, you'll fail again. Everything inside of us, in most situations of life, there is an ongoing dialogue and division or confrontation of just personalities and thoughts rising and ceasing constantly, a struggle. So you could say one level of oneness that would naturally happen in a person when they become more and more awakened in this process would be the cessation of that inner conflict. They would be a whole human being. They would feel very, very grounded at what they do. They'd feel very clear at what they do, and they'd feel very inspired that they're following what they feel in tune with, and they're very inspirational and passionate because life is coming from their heart. Each moment they feel what's right and they go do it. So you could simply say they become a very successful human being at that level. So then the oneness even grows beyond that. Suddenly you start seeing the interconnectivity of all life. You can simply start seeing, you say, everything is arising and ceasing together. Everything is dependent on each other. Because you've seen so much inside yourself and now there's a cessation in it, you see it yourself in other people. You simply see, man, it's all these arising personalities and thoughts in everyone else. So suddenly you have tremendous compassion for anyone. That's why I simply was saying, somebody's yelling at you, or they call, say you're a part of a cult, or whatever it is, it doesn't matter to you, because you only see the exact same things that exist in you, that arise and cease within you. It's not the exact person, but the same correlations. So suddenly you're in a very, very beautiful state, where you suddenly really look beyond you at this point to the environment around you. Then you could say the oneness even grows beyond that. So we could say your consciousness moves to such levels where you suddenly realize, basically you start seeing that everything is you, and you are everything. And it can keep on going and keep on going. So you could say that the oneness, there is no necessarily beginning state of oneness, we're in state of oneness. We know people who are in extremely high states of consciousness, and to them the process is full steam ahead, it's still going. You can never say, oh, I've made it, this and that. In fact, the only irony to this whole awakening process is when you realize there's nothing to make and there's nowhere to go. There's no end point.
So it's just like surfing the internet. You're not ever going to reach the end.
Exactly. There's a beginningless beginning and an endless end. You only see that everything is the process. You suddenly awaken to the fact there's nothing to awaken to. It's very beautiful.
Well, something else that was said that I find interesting, it's not a religion. It's not a cult.
No, not at all. It seems
to be more of a physical experience that affects your mental state, and it doesn't have anything to do with your particular religious beliefs, ideology, et cetera, et cetera. Whether you're an atheist, a Christian, a Muslim, a Hindu, Taoist, whatever religion you subscribe to, this is something that conflicts with none of it.
It's the best way to describe it as the founders have described it. They say that they consider themselves nothing but technicians. They say it's a neurobiological event that happens in the brain. Certain centers of your brain, the parietal lobes, are way overactive. Other centers of your brain, the frontal lobe, and some other parts, are underactive. And basically, this energy rebalances the brain in a very neurobiological way. It's something that you could receive a blessing, the oneness blessing, or diksha. And you simply go get an MRI scan, and you would actually see your brain is functioning differently at that point. And if you ask that person who would receive that, they'd say, I feel like I'm exactly the same. It's the same thoughts, the same beliefs, but I feel very calm. And no longer do the thoughts seem to interfere with my day-to-day moments. The university actually has classes for every religion, including atheistic people. So it's not that there's any, to them it doesn't matter. To them, only thing they see is the human being's brain is primitive in the sense that it's operating in a primal survival mode right now. And that basically if these adjustments are made, their consciousness can expand and grow, and they can flower as a person. They can truly, truly flower. And they can truly come in tune with who and what they are, why they're here, and they can truly live an abundant life of just simply enjoying what is there. So it's very much not a cult, not a religion, no one to follow, no one to worship. In fact, you discover your own, the divine. When the brain simply, the founders basically say that, to them they say, man and the divine are not the same, but man and the divine are not separate, but just two ends of the same reality. And it's simply the wall of the mind that is a hindrance or a blockage to them experiencing their own higher selves or the universal consciousness. And so basically as the brain adjusts, or this energy basically corrects the brain, you become very, very much in tune with your own faith, with your own beliefs, your own concepts. To you, it becomes a very real experience. A person believing in Christ would actually have a relationship with their Christ. Same with Buddha, same with an atheist. To them, it would be the universe, and they would be in utter communication with their higher self. I find myself extremely in tune with my higher self, you could say. And these are things that I would never, ever have believed in unless it was an experience, because I simply didn't believe in any of this stuff. But now it's a reality to me because of my experiences. And I've seen it happen to many other people as well. And that's what's really beautiful. I see a Christian become a true Christian, more of a Christian than they were before. And same with every other religion on the planet. So it's a very, very beautiful thing.
Well, so far, you know, listening to your description of the experience and how it really changes a person's life, you know, it sounds like there really isn't any downside to it. You know, most things you're like, well, you can get real healthy, but you got to eat this really nasty food for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. I know what you're saying. There is, in one sense, you could say it's a journey, and in this sense, it will address this aspect.
Uh-huh.
You see, a lot of us don't look within us. A lot of us sorrow manage ourselves, self-medicate ourselves through any means. A lot of us are so busy in the external world because we don't like to sit still for 5 minutes because it's uncomfortable. The way our brain is built right now, at least if we say the way it is functioning, we don't know how to experience fully what happens in our lives. And anything that's not fully experienced, let's say you have a tremendous divorce or breakup, somebody passes away in your life, or somebody's abusive to you on some level or another, you don't want to experience it fully. In fact, the mind will not allow you to. It will run. It will say, forget that person, drop it, let it be over, let's just go eat some ice cream. So suddenly the hurt stores in the body. And every time you see that person or think that person, that hurt's there, so suddenly you dislike that person. That person to you still exists from that moment on, that exact personality, the way they were. To you, that is, there's a real person there as opposed to just that event happening.
Uh-huh.
So the point is that when this blessing starts happening, or this oneness blessing of Diksha, and the process of awakening starts happening and unfolding, quite naturally all of those things start releasing, and it's a very beautiful process. But in one sense, you start really discovering that the true nature of suffering is actually a place you put yourself because you weren't aware of all the factors. You were in a lower state of consciousness where you simply weren't seeing what causes suffering. So you could say that as you start realizing you dug your own grave, as you start awakening, you start digging yourself out of your own grave, you start climbing out of it. So it's a process, like a roller coaster in a sense, as these releases start happening and as this awakening starts unfolding, that sometimes you'll be very sensitive or you'll take things very personally. And then a day later, suddenly you'll be in the most liberated state because you'll see that was a pattern ever since you were 5 years old because of the way your parents treated you. So you can say it's a beautiful journey, in the sense that it releases all that stuff. And overall, I would say there's not very much downside to it in the biggest way. And it's been a very beautiful process for me overall.
Well, you know, to me it sounds like something that fits in with our modern lives, excuse me, and enhances what we're all looking for to begin with.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, because nobody is looking to be sickly and have poor relationships and be miserable and unable to concentrate and incapable of supporting themselves. Those are not our goals.
No. And it's amazing, for me at least, to see how I set up my life to quote-unquote become something wonderful and great, because then I'll be happy. And how, like, we see on society and TV and media, we see that people who make it successfully or do this and do that, they then are happy. But then when we look really closely, we realize they're kind of miserable as well. So it's a tremendous gift that's being given to humanity. In fact, it's sort of a phenomenon. It's not necessarily just something that's always been abundant like this. Normally when somebody was seeking to be awakened, the person who had that ability to transfer that state or that diksha, that oneness blessing in the past, they only could give it to a couple people. But humanity is at a certain time to evolve as a species. So it's being abundantly given to everyone, just with no prerequisites. So it's a tremendous, tremendous gift for you to get back and really enjoy the life you're leading. And for you who are not able to enjoy that life because there's other things you want to do, as you awaken quite naturally, you really are inspired to go out and do it. Always wanted to, because you don't have the hindrances and blocks inside of you.
I guess the one thing I'm kind of curious about is, okay, you do this energy transfer, and this cosmic energy is flowing through the person that you've just given it to. How does that energy flow help them get rid of all the blockages and garbage that they've picked up through their lives that's causing them problems?
In what sense do you mean causing no problem, or causing them problems?
Causing the problems. You know, you were talking about things like, you know, in relationships, you know, a poor relationship with your father when you were a child, or something a teacher did to you in third grade, or whatever. You know, that's affecting your entire life as you move on. Okay, then they come to the Oneness University, and, you know, they have an energy transfer and whatnot. How does that affect those past events?
Absolutely. Yes, a good question. In one sense, the entire nature of this energy transfer is basically the universe reaching out to mankind. You could simply say that the universe and its creation or its intelligence is very, very intelligent and very aware. A lot of people who have concepts about, you know, their higher selves, or the divine, or the universe, if you want to call it such a thing, is that it's just an impersonal thing that's just simply out there someplace, just operating. And if it is alive, maybe it's so busy it has nothing to do with us. But this energy transfer is guided by that. In fact, it is that. And it knows exactly what to do. These founders were born in such states where they felt they weren't separate from the universe at all. And basically, they know through their experiences in life and right now the states of consciousness they're in, exactly the problems that the human being goes through, because we're all sort of the same body and the same digital perception, in a sense, you know? Different scales to it, but we're basically the same life encounters and circumstances that are around us. So there's a huge intent behind the energy to do just that. And one of the aspects, in a very technical way, is that it awakens the bodily energies, you could say the kundalini or the spinal energies, and also cleans or awakens and opens the different energy centers, as you could say chakras, in the body. Quite naturally, as these things occur, all the traumas in the body naturally start releasing at that point. Because let's say an old car that's been sitting out in the wintertime, and there's ice all over the car, but you turn on the engine, and suddenly the heat starts breaking apart the ice. It's very much sort of the same way. As the awakening of energy inside the body and as the attunement into the natural energies around you, quite naturally all the muck or the barriers just naturally crack away. So it's a little bit of both of those.
Okay, so yeah, I guess there's so many questions kind of rushing through my head.
Please ask as many as you like. Absolutely.
Well, you know, at the end of it, you know, like, okay, to talk about bringing the gift of love to the people in North America, you know, in Canada and the United States and whatnot, what would that actually mean? You know, if assume it's achieved, what will that mean?
Can you restate that so I can understand it? I don't understand exactly the way maybe you're asking.
Okay, all right. All right, when I was reading the in the introduction, okay, it says, find it right here. Let's see. Okay, Sri Rani is a spiritual leader and founder of the Oneness Movement in the United States and made her mission to help bring the gift of love to the people of the United States and Canada.
Mm.
Let's assume that that mission has been achieved. What will that mean?
Okay. Basically, what we have discovered, and I've discovered in my own life through this process, is that quite naturally, when the awakening happens in an individual, and quite naturally as these blocks and barriers and traumas of their past get released, the individual finds themselves in a very natural state of bliss or love, or if whatever, those are just kind of names, but you could simply, it's hard to describe the state, but you could say at every moment you feel completely fulfilled, at each moment you find things very joyful, you feel like a child again in a sense. You feel open and free.
So we're going to have a continent full of children.
In a sense, but you could even say very immature, intelligent children. Not necessarily the idea that when you're a child you suddenly become irresponsible or immature, but in the sense that you're liberated, you're free, you feel great about who you are, you accept yourself for who you are, and you feel abundant in the sense of joy inside of you. In fact, you naturally just want to help everyone else because you have so much abundance inside of you of joy. And you'll notice that in a lot of people, like Mother Teresa, the Hugging Saint Amaji. Many people, they just are out there helping others for no reason. They just say it just feels right to do because deep inside of them, there's a tremendous state of joy or universal bliss. So that is really what is meant by giving the gift of love to people, is that we want to see each individual in that state. We really believe that a great way to help society and our environment, to stop wars, things like that, is place everyone in a state where they feel so much fulfillment inside of them that they just want to help everyone else, and they become very conscious about what they're doing each moment and how they're affecting others. If you can do that...
I guess more what I was asking was, what is your vision of what life would be living here once that is achieved?
Mm, okay. I don't know exactly what would be, but if I could make one up in a sense, I could really see how we would become a nation that would really, really strive to help other nations. We become a nation that would be, has all the technology and infrastructure to basically really start being conservative in the sense that we're going to help our environment. We'll really use technology to really be in tune with what is needed to thrive on this planet and to be in tune with it. A lot of things, I think a lot of the different structures in place will naturally take a reverse role. I think people, the naturally large companies and things like that will be really striving to give and help. It'll be a very, very beautiful nation, and it will be a very beautiful way of life. I can definitely see that. Because I can see the people who work in our office, we're all in very nice states because of this process. And the way we work, there's no real competition, there's no striving to be better. There's just a general harmony with just being who we are with what we are and working together as a team. And I've never seen that in any other place that I've worked at before. So it shows me that there's a great, and it's the same way the university. If you have a chance to go and see the way, the quality of life there, you'll see that each person is naturally content, and each person's content, they're in tune. And when you're in tune, you work together as a collective, you know, with what's needed to happen, everyone's inspired to do in a sense.
Okay. Maybe I should send one of my coworkers to India, actually.
I'm telling you, for me, I only say this because it's my experience, but it was the single most greatest gift I've ever given myself. I'm just so grateful that that's being offered. And it's being offered in a way that I didn't have to join anything. I didn't have to feel obligated about anything. I didn't have to practice anything. It was just given. And that's that. The only thing they want is for you to live an abundant, happy life in your own way. That's all they're asking for.
So the Oneness Movement is, it seems to be focused on a bit of a, I guess, a more physical aspect of the collective consciousness or cosmic consciousness or universal consciousness, but it seems to be focusing on the physical. You have this physical energy transfer, which has a physical effect on your brain, and, you know, they don't have their own ideology, so they seem to be focusing much more on the physical aspects of the whole life experience.
In one sense, that is correct, but you see, in one sense you could say they're primarily focused on the internal, in one sense. And it's a paradox in it, but it's actually makes perfect sense, is that, see, their ability is to completely change the internal, not by changing the structure of mind, but changing your awareness of the mind, when you simply are perceiving thoughts just being thoughts, not associated with you. You simply perceive personalities just rising and ceasing, but not necessarily the quote-unquote you.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly are liberated from internal conflict. So suddenly, externally, everything changes for you, because all the challenges you had in life and all these blocks and barriers quite naturally aren't there anymore. So yes, it's very easy to go live like an abundant life.
Okay.
But internally,
hold on to those thoughts, Doug. It's time for us to take a break again, folks.
Yes, absolutely.
So stay tuned to the Donna Shades, and we'll be right back and talk about the Oneness Movement with Doug Bentley. Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and we are discussing the Oneness Movement with our guest, Doug Bentley. For those of you who are interested in joining the discussion by calling in on the toll-free number, you may do so at 1-877-786-0562. You can also join the virtual auditorium in Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com and clicking on the Paranormal Radio Network Room in the Social Issues category. And if you're feeling shy, I've got an answer for you there, too. You can email me a text question by going to www.giascott.com and clicking on one of the links there to email me. We're in the last portion of the show tonight, so if you have questions, you need to get them in as soon as possible. So, Doug, where were we? I think my train of thought is derailed during the break.
Mine has, too, actually. Do you have any other questions, maybe?
Oh, well, let's see. Lots of things. I guess the big thing, you know, we were talking about how it's more focused on the physical.
Mm.
So this awakening, you know, does it have other effects on you besides your physical being? You know, is it like an increase in psi activity? That's something a lot of people are curious about. You know, are they if they become more awakened, or is there the psychic phenomena going to be more prevalent in their life?
I can share from my experiences that it's interesting that in one state of being before this process, everything that was going on inside my mind was quote-unquote Doug. It was just this idea that I am me, and it was me being, you know, everything that I am inside my mind. And then in this process, more and more, suddenly the brain slowed down a little bit and an awakening happened. I suddenly saw how thoughts just came in and left. And I remember they talking about the university, they'd say, your thoughts are not your thoughts. Everyone's a part of it. Everyone's thinking this, thinking that. We're all being kind of affected with each other. I remember being on the bus one day, and I was driving past my friend's house. And I suddenly had my normal daydreams as I daydream. And it was this daydream about, oh, she's had this problem with this boyfriend, and she thinks she might be pregnant, and this problem and that problem, and she might have to, the guy doesn't love her, and this and that. 5 hours later, I get a phone call from her. And that exact daydream that I had suddenly was her experiences. And it really gave me an understanding that everything that's happening to me is interconnected to everyone else and everything else. And so suddenly a new dimension kind of opened up for me, a dimension of an attunement in a sense where I really saw how when you're necessarily thinking about somebody and they call a couple minutes later, this and that, it's not necessarily it's just you just thinking about somebody. It was that energetically that person was thinking of you or connecting to you. There was some type of charge or their consciousness was in your direction, pointing in your direction. So in a lot of ways, I could say that a lot more psychic abilities had opened up. But more, I'd have to say, not in the sense that it's a tool that I can use, but more in a sense that it was already there, I just simply wasn't even in tune with it or aware of it. I find myself extremely in tune with things that are happening and going on, and I know, I wouldn't necessarily, don't believe necessarily in this idea of right and wrong per se, but I know within me what is right and wrong at that moment to do. And so I could say yes, that a lot of times we awaken to are other abilities that are quite naturally there that are just simply dormant or we're not aware of to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. Another question, you know, a lot of the listeners are very interested in extraterrestrials and abductions and UFOs and whatnot. You know, being more awakened and aware and in tune with the universe, would, you know, do you know anybody who has had alien contact that has become awakened?
Are you saying that, like, through alien contacts they've become awakened, or are you
no,
simply saying...
No, someone who is awakened and also has alien contact. I mean, they don't necessarily have to go hand-in-hand anymore than...
Because
I shook an Asian person's hand doesn't mean I'm going to speak Chinese.
Being for the last 2.5 years, basically, of meeting various people on this spiritual path, I've run into many, many people who've had many profound experiences with extraterrestrial life. I wouldn't say it's been my experience, and nor do I don't necessarily have a stance that they exist or not exist. To me, it's, if I have that experience, it'll be a reality to me. I haven't noticed anybody, because of them becoming awakened, they've had these experiences and that correlation. But I have noticed in one aspect that the more and more we awaken, the more and more we're no longer held to the belief of something existing or not existing, and more that we're open to receive or to explore at every possibility. I would definitely say that in this process, because of these awakenings that have happened inside of me, I'm very much open to the idea and aware to all these different various possibilities. And it's a very beautiful thing, actually, because before I absolutely would tell you there's no such thing. And now, to me, I couldn't see how there wouldn't be life beyond our planet. To me, the entire universe is extremely alive, and life is happening on every level. So, to me, I've never had the direct experience, but it's not something that I would not, it's not something that I would not think is not possible, put it that way.
Okay. Well, we have a question from the virtual auditorium. So, Dimensional Sarge, you'll come to the mic, give your first name and your location. You are live and on the air with Doug Bentley. She's asked a good question.
That's a great question. I'm very happy to answer this. To me, what I see, and what the university actually speaks about as well, is that in time period we're in right now, a tremendous awakening is simply occurring in our species. Our species is basically ready to evolve. The evolution this time isn't going to be the next invention. We basically build everything we need to really have an abundant life. The next evolution that needs to happen to our species is a conscious evolution. It's moving from a primitive state of being to a state where we find ourselves being responsible and awakened to playing a very, very beautiful role of helping the planet thrive, helping the other species on the planet grow, things like that. And we're in a time period where many predictions, many prophecies, many saints and sages have all talked about that a mass awakening is simply occurring to our species. This oneness blessing is here to simply help us facilitate that role. There's many, many masters, many, many awakened beings, many, many organizations on all levels, all faiths, all beliefs that have all kind of popped up in the recent times who are also aiding in this role, bringing awareness to our species, awakening us from our ignorance. So you'll see a lot of people using the word differently, but equally you'll see correlations in what they're speaking of. They'll feel like they learn suddenly to eat a healthier diet, or some people will suddenly learn that there could be extraterrestrial life. Some people will learn, you know, maybe the way things are working isn't necessarily the most productive to helping our society or environment or the individual. These are all awakenings.
Well, I'm noticing, you know, it kind of in line with November's question, is that there's a lot of similarities between the oneness movement, between a lot of other they're not even as organized as movements, but just sort of clusters of people who are putting forth, you know, the ideas that the answers that you need aren't out there, they're inside you.
Absolutely.
That, you know, this energy exists. And I have to admit, I'm a pretty skeptical person, you know? There was, someone was trying to tell me about energy balls, these balls of energy that you can make and you can do all sorts of things with. And I was like, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, this is the Emperor's New Clothes. I've heard this story before, you know. And I absolutely did not believe him. And I was mentioning, you know, talking about this in a conversation with a friend, and she's like, oh, he means this. And boom, she does it, shows it to me, puts it in my hand, and it's like, whoa, this is real. This isn't the Emperor's New Clothes. And I was like, whoa, I got to go back and tell this guy, you know, I'm really, really sorry. I didn't believe you, and now I know you're right, you know. And, you know, so a lot of times, you know, we do have to look at an idea seven ways to Sunday. We have to touch it, feel it, smell it, taste it. And then, and only then, does it really start to sink in.
Absolutely, and I think that's the most important thing. I think you touched on something that I'd have to say is the most important thing. And it's something that the university stresses, and I recommend it to everyone, is that it doesn't matter what truth you've heard out there. It doesn't matter what you read on the internet, this and that. What reality and truth is, to me at least, is what experiences I've had that have made my reality a certain way. And that's the most important thing I think the university stresses, is that they're not necessarily so concerned about giving you some teaching or some idea of truth. They're not necessarily ready to try to teach you something new. Because it only goes so far until you return back to your same self. They're basically trying to give you the actual experience. And through your experiences, they become a new type of reality, a new type of awakening. And there's many organizations out there that are all saying the same thing. Awakened people have been on our planet for many, many years. It's been always types of Eckhart Tolle, David Hawkins, just to name some modern day ones, Byron Katie. So they're talking about this state of consciousness where they don't feel separate from anything. They're talking about reality beyond the delusion of the mind. And so you'll see a lot of people saying the same thing. What is very beautiful about the oneness movement and this oneness blessing and this energy transfer is that it literally delivers you into that state of consciousness. Like, I would try to understand Eckhart Tolle before I went to the process, and it wouldn't make any sense to me. I get back from the process, and I totally understand where he's coming from, at least from my experiences. I wouldn't say I'm experiencing his exact state of consciousness. But I get it. I get what he's saying, where it's being in the now. I get what he's saying, where life is bliss and joy when you're experiencing just what's right in front of you. Because that's an experience to me.
Okay, I have a question in text from the virtual auditorium. And it says, what makes someone want to find truth in India? Is there no truth to find here in the States? So why would someone need to go to India, besides that just being the physical location? Why couldn't they have another university within the United States?
It's a very good question, in the sense that, first of all, anyone who wants to awaken, quite naturally the universe will respond to you. It just will. What's unique about India in one aspect is it's where the founders actually live. And these founders have been in these very, very high states of being all of their lives. And all the people who work around them, which is about 200 teachers there, who have been with them for many years now to help facilitate this role in helping humans, they all have been, you could say, fully awakened as well. They're all in extremely high states of being. So they started giving it to all the towns right around their area, which is in a very kind of rural area. And many of the people right in that area are all in very high states of consciousness now because of it. So in one sense, India offers the idea that there's like a vortex, there's an energy zone, where everyone you'll be around will be in a fully awakened state of being. So quite naturally, a lot of cosmic consciousness or universal energy can be a very abundant and readily available to help you. And so when they take an intent to help you, the energy is there abundantly to help facilitate that intent. So that's one sense why India is there. I definitely believe that every path leads to the same source, and I believe that anyone who wants to awaken, the universe can't help but not respond. It definitely responds to you. So it's basically just a way to help you on your path. It's not necessarily the only way, this and that. It just really can help. And really help you take stepping stones on your own truth or your own searching.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, we're getting close to the end here now, folks. Before we run out of time, I want to make sure that you can have a chance to tell people how to find the Oneness Movement, what your website is, and so forth and so on.
Sure. Basically, the website onenessmovement.org, and oneness is spelled out O-N-E-N-E-S-S, movement.org, is a very beautiful website in the fact that there's 1,400 people who've gone through the process in India that live all around America. And they're all holding retreats and workshops and can give this energy transfer. So my suggestion is anyone who's curious and this rings true or resonates inside of you, definitely go to our website and search underneath the Oneness Facilitators on the right-hand side for somebody in your area. And just call them up or contact them through our website. And if they resonate with you, go and have an experience. And that way it can be something that you can at least say, I've had the experience. And it will resonate with you in that level. Sri Rani G is an amazing person who spoke a little bit earlier. She conducts workshops all around America. If she's coming to your area and it's something that's convenient for you to go, I'd highly suggest going because tremendous energies surround her that are very, very healing and awakening. So the website's a great way to contact us. And there's a website called onenessuniversity.org that talks about the actual Oneness University. But there's a lot of information on the onenessmovement.org that also caters to that.
Okay. All right. And, you know, like a brief thing, what would you say is the most important concept for the Oneness Movement?
I think the most important thing that could possibly ever be stressed by the Oneness Movement is just to know that humanity is going through a tremendous change right now. And each and every one of us is going through stuff. You're not alone, and no one's outside of that scope of inner struggle. And that the greatest thing you can do in this time period, as this change happens to our species, is set right your relationships. Really, really try to look inside of yourself. Become aware of what's happening inside of yourself, inside your relationships. And really try to forget and forgive those around you. Really try to go in and experience the hurt fully inside of you when you have, let's say, anger towards your mother, father, spouse, anyone. Try to let the anger and that kind of frustration come up so you can experience it fully, so it can be released. And really strive to set right your relationships. I guarantee if you set the right relationships with your mother and your father and the loved ones, you'll notice tremendous and auspicious things happening to your life. A lot of grace can flow into you once your relationships are set right because there's not so many blocks hindering you.
Okay. Well, I know that it has been an intensely interesting show tonight. I hope everyone has enjoyed it as much as I have. Doug, I want to thank you very much for appearing on the show tonight.
Thank you so much. It's been really a pleasure to be here and an honor. Thank you.
Well, folks, it's a wrap for this week's version of the Dawn of Shades. Next week, we will have Vaishali on October 2nd. Then we'll wrap up this topic series with a discussion with November Hansen on October 9th. PMH Atwater will join us on October 16th, and then we'll be discussing Sasquatch and Bigfoot on October 23rd. On the 30th, we're going to have our version of the Halloween special. So, tune in each week, smile, and remember, this is an amazing journey we are on. And I hope each one of you finds your own personal path to your destiny. I'm your host, Gia Scott, and I thank you very much for listening to the Dawn of Shades with me tonight. Them saddles on coming out of them speakers was so much fun to go.